नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। वी आर लिटिल डिलेड हियर।
Live from Super Soul Farm, this is Wisdom of the Sages with your host Raghunath and co-host and bestie and senior educator at the Bhakti Center in New York City, Kastubha Das. Welcome to our show. Welcome to our Srimad Bhagavatam show, and welcome to a special edition. Today's a special edition show because we have a very, very special guest, His Holiness Sachinandana Maharaj, who resides in Germany, but he's actually world traveler. World traveler, wandering mendicant, monk, and holds a special place in my life. I first met Maharaj when I went to India in 1988. I don't know if you remember that, Maharaj, but I met you in 1988 at the appearance of Radha Kukun.
Yes.
Place. You remember that?
Yes. Everyone trying to get at the same time into a holy tank, and it was chaos, and amongst all this chaos, three of us, I think Danuda Maharaj also, were there trying to do the same thing, getting into and take our sacred bath. I remember.
What company I got, it was Bibi Govinda Maharaj, Danuda Swami, and Sachidananda Maharaj, and my little old self, who knew nothing. I knew nothing. I came to this holy little village. And they took me, and it was packed. And at midnight, it was packed. And they said, we sing and we chant, and then at midnight, we bathe. And it was left a special impression in my mind that night that that I always want to bring people here and come here and do these things and find out about these joyous festivals. And anybody who's been to India with me, I hand that gift to you, or you could repay, don't repay me, pay back Sachidananda Maharaj, because he is one of the key people in my life that has given me a taste for sacred India. And I see him in India, I've seen him in Germany when our band used to go on tour. He was like our spiritual lifeline, because going on tour is always tough. And I would reach out to him, and going through some problems, Maharaj, can you give me some advice? And he'd give advice. Sometimes he'd show up at our shows unexpected, and we were incredibly joyous. And even last year when Shelter did a reunion in Berlin, he was there, he came. that was a great night.
I think Maharaj maybe even, did he jump off the stage one time at his Shelter thing?
He might have stage dived. He's the stage diving Swami. But you've been such a joy in my life and my wife's life, and you also came to Super Soul Farm, unexpected. A lot of us listening to the show were there that night. You showed up with Radha Swami at Super Soul Farm, and that was an incredible, incredible night I'll never forget. So, and to have you on the show, it's like, whenever I meet a great soul like yourself, I want the world to meet people like you. And you do so much work in transforming people's lives and really giving joy to people. And as far as I'm concerned, that's the highest metric of success. You live so much joy that you give it to other people. Thank you so much, Maharaj, for joining us here.
I thank you, and I want to say you are reflecting the joy very nicely.
Do you want to, before your ecstasy completely overflows, Raghu, do you want to make your announcements and introductory comments?
Your thing got cut off. Do me make them or Maharaj make them?
No, you. In other words,
do I have anything like a standard to say?
Well, we want to say that we're bringing Maharaj back on Thursday for the Patreon members, right?
So yeah, Patreon members, we have this a great special meditation class with Maharaj Thursday. What's our time with that, Kastubha?
That's 11 a.m. Eastern Time.
11 a.m. is Eastern Time. You can join us live, Patreon members. And if
Maharaj will lead a meditation as well as answer questions from the audience.
Nice. If you missed that, that will be saved on our Patreon account. Thanks, everybody, for all the support. We have about, how many people we have live today, Mara? 144 people live. And then we have about, Is it true that we have 1,200 Russians here today?
We have Russians.
Where are
there,
they?
I'm going to tell you.
I don't see them.
I'll explain. That through Facebook Live, they're connecting with that and then somehow projecting it further from that. And there's a group called Vukontaktia. So we want to say privyet to everyone listening over Vukontaktia. It's great to have you here.
Dziękuję. That's Polish. It's
Pasibo. All right. And
yes, this is called transcendental Russian collusion. This is spiritual. We get together. We're completely aloof of this bodily conception, so we go right to spiritual information, and we connect cross boundaries, cross continents. Thank you,
okay,
Maharaj. Welcome to the show. That's all our information. Can I start with
let's go
introduction?
Yes,
question,
please.
Or you want to start with that?
Well, you just introduced a topic, so maybe we just go with that first.
Okay, it's a good topic. Maharaj, this was burning at me, and I didn't give you a preparation for this question, but I know you speak off the top of your heart. Not off the top of your head, off the top of your heart, and this is what I want to put out there. You have this very powerful ability to bring joy wherever you go. I've noticed that. I've taken notice. I've tried to copy it. It doesn't work. But I try. You give it because you're filled with joy. And it, to me, that's the metric of success. That's how you measure success. Can you give joy to other people's lives, in your work, in your lifestyle, in your family, etc.? What do we do if people suffer from having no joy? How can I give it away if I don't have it? How can I become more joyful? How can I add joy to my life? How can I get over my mind? How can I get rid of self-loathing, self-doubt? People suffer from this tremendously. What can we do if we ourselves don't love ourselves? How can we go give love to others? Do you have some mystical, magical, spiritual tool for us? Can you help us, Maharaj?
I can tell you what I do. When I'm in a situation where things get over my head and I'm nerved and unnerved and so on, I need to expand my consciousness. When you are in shrunken consciousness, you are unhappy. When you are in vast consciousness, you are happy. I would like to give you an example. Look at this cup here. If I put a little, let us say, a teaspoon of salt in that cup, it tastes very, very, very bad. But if I would put even a tablespoon of salt into a large aquarium, you know, a large container, then the salt would be an enhancement. It would maybe give a little tinge of everything. So when you have a shrunken consciousness, which is only concerned of I, me, and mine, then the little smallest things which happen either from the outside or in the inside, you know, some self-loathing, some self-criticism, it will totally spoil everything in your consciousness. You need to know how to make your consciousness wide. And then these things which were before a disturbance, including your own self, maybe, who created disturbance, will become a lesson, something you learn from, something that enhances your life. So the whole idea really is to know how to expand the consciousness and bring it from shrunken consciousness to a vast consciousness. And what I do is, the first thing is, I step back. Chip. I step back from the situation which annoys me, even my own mindset. I step back, and then I create space. And in that space, I put things like, I remember I'm eternal. I remember I belong to absolutely blissful entity called Krishna. And then that space, which was occupied by garbage, becomes filled with nectar, and it expands the consciousness so that I can say, this is what disturbed me a moment ago. No problem.
That's beautiful.
Is it too esoteric or impractical?
No, it's too simple, though. Yeah. It's too simple if I have a lot of garbage. Maybe you only had a little garbage in there and you got rid of it quick. What about if it's a haunting voice? People suffer nowadays from these haunting voices of self-deprecation, self-loathing. How do you replace those voices? Is it a practice of thinking I'm blissful, I'm part of Krishna, I'm part of something bigger, I'm part of my higher power? Is that a practice? Is it a switch I turn on? If I've been training myself to do it wrong all these years and listening to these voices, how do I change the voices? How do I get rid of those ghosts?
Yes, you need...
I'm miserable!
You need to know the science of rewiring yourself. When we are wired in a certain way, we have what we call in Sanskrit certain sanskaras, deeply embedded thought habits, and we go through them again and again in endless reoccurring cycles. So before the bomb explodes, rewire yourself. And that is a process which, in my mind, you have to do on four levels. You have to become physically a little bit stronger, not so exhausted. You have to live more healthy. That's on the physical platform. On the mental platform, you have to start positive ways of reacting to a situation. You will see, instead of just doing it the old way, you find better ways. And spiritually, you have to also rewire yourself, maybe. I call this, in simple language, you have to know the emotional traffic light. Red, yellow, green. I think it's in America also, you have these colors. Yes. You have to stop, red. Before you are stopped, stop the train of your life. And then a yellow, think what you can now do to enhance your life, which is not turning in the way you want. Watch yourself carefully, like you can do when you stand with your car on the traffic light. It's yellow, you don't go anywhere, and you can look around now. Who else is there with you in the same situation? And then, only after you have rewired yourself, physically, emotionally, spiritually, then you go green. Let's go into my new life. But if you keep on thinking the same thought circles again and again, you will be most probably acting in the same circles, and you will act as your jailer and your prisoner. The one who throws you into the prison is called a jailer, and the victim is called the prisoner. Rewire yourself, find new sanskaras, create new ways of thinking and acting that serve you. For instance, when I listen, I have listened a few times to Wisdom of the Sages now, and there are often some impulses. You know, we hear how Raghunath says something super inspiring, we hear how Kostuba says something super intelligent, and it strikes us. We feel some resonance to this point. Now take this point away from your computer and put it into your life. So you have a new thought and a new action. And in this way, you create a better version than your present miserable self.
That's what we're working on, Maharaj. Thank you so much.
I'm not saying you to you, Raghunath. I'm using the universe.
I'm asking you about me. This is about no one else except me. I'm a mess.
Okay, Maharaj, I have an important question for all of us, for all our listeners. And we respect you as a person that has a real, you know, you were born in Germany, but you have a strong connection to the authentic bhakti yoga tradition. And you spent time in the holy places in India and wandering alone there and meeting the people and learning the teachings for 50 years now. But when we look at how the Western world has taken on the yoga culture and the yoga practices and yoga teachings, sometimes, and this is a general state, it's a generalization, it's not an absolute statement, but it can often feel like we're just kind of like operating on this very superficial level of it. That in the Western world, the yoga teachings and culture, it's not so potent in delivering its practitioners to deeper and deeper levels of real spiritual understanding. Is there something that we are missing, something important, some clue that the Western yoga world really needs to consider more in our practicing of yoga?
I could jump in a second. Kostubi, you know, I won't say the name, but a very famous yoga teacher said this once. I went to a workshop with this person, and he said, you know, we've really taken this vinyasa yoga to new levels. We've like explored, we can do things with our body. But the only thing that's really troubling me is, after years of doing this, we're yet to produce a sadhu. And so I think, what are we missing out on? What can we add to our yoga practice, our yoga life? Or we just froze on us.
Yes, I think I understood. Raghunath got mysteriously frozen, although it's not his nature. Are you with us, Raghunath, again?
He will probably come right back in.
Okay.
Please answer the question.
Yes, yes, okay. See, why are we still lacking a person who has... Or several persons that really show saintly qualities, a transformation of the personality. I think when we approach yoga, we have to understand it's like a banquet. There's something for the physical well-being in yoga. There's something for the emotional well-being in yoga. There is something for the character in yoga. There is something for the spiritual well-being. But very often, people who show an interest of yoga only take one preparation which is there. That is the advices which are there for physical well-being. What happens if you... you know, in yoga, there's so much more for emotional well-being, for how to live your life, you know, the yamas and niyamas, and also for spiritual well-beings, the areas of mantra, the areas of surrender. If you are an atheistic yogi, you surrender to the unknown. You don't try to control everything. If you are a theistic yogi, you enter the lane of devotion, and so on. Really, yoga is like a huge banquet with many preparations. But imagine someone who only eats the cheese. He will become fat. He will his nadis, his energy channels will become stuck and so on. And that is happening a lot with many areas of yoga. They are creating physical well-being, but they also create ego monsters who identify with the body. Oh, I'm, look at my body, look at my behind, it is so shapely, so on. And as a result, this whole idea of yoga, to understand who you really are, beyond just your dress, your physical dress, your body, is left on the side. And I don't think this is anyone's fault, because yes, we approach yoga for our various reasons, but I would really encourage everyone, including the yoga teachers, to look at the whole banquet, what is there, and what
banquet.
Is yeah. Banquet, yes, banquet. Yes. And you will nourish yourself on all areas. Physical, yes, no problem. Oh, good. I also do physical yoga like anything. Emotional, yes. Spiritual, and you will see your whole potential comes out. But if you only are one-sided on one thing, in the end you will suffer.
Okay. Thank you for that. That's very helpful. And what we're talking about, well, actually, I wanted to bring up your very nice book. I'll bring it closer to the camera so people can see The Living Name. This is a book. It came out maybe a year and a half ago or so, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That amount of time. And this is a book, it really, one of the reasons why we really wanted to bring you on was because a lot of what I take from your contribution to the world is an encouragement and an enthusiasm to take our spiritual life inward, to really reach for that inner spiritual life, which is not an easy thing, particularly with the lifestyles that we have. But you wrote at the beginning of this book, you wrote a poem to Lord Krishna. And in that poem, you shared this verse. You said, "When will I feel your name pulsating with life, like that young bird who once flew into my open palms?" And when I hear that, I imagine what it's like to hold a little bird and the thing's full of energy and it's all, you know. And so, you know, even amongst those of us who have a strong interest in spirituality or bhakti, it's hard to focus on the inner life when we've got responsibilities and there's distractions in the world. It's something that seems romantic and beautiful, but inaccessible. How can our, living in the world that we live in, with all the difficulties that we have and the distractions that we have, is there a way that you could help us understand how we can make our own spiritual practice pulsate with that kind of life?
How, it is such a joy for me to listen to you. You put the words so nicely and a rich imagery appears before us. Very, very nice. And very inspiring. And yes, how do we bring our spiritual life alive? That may sound almost, yes. There is something in the Sanskrit tradition where there is dead yoga and living yoga. Our dead practice, mechanistically performed, and deeply nourishing practice. And I would like to give you a tip how to touch the life wire of your spiritual life so that you become alive. Although this example is somewhat sensational, touching a life wire, it holds some truth. You must know where the current of energy flows, which you yourself are seeking. In some ways, the tradition describes all of us as sparks who have fallen away from the fire and who are not really alive any longer, but who struggle for existence, like a spark who has fallen out of the fire and who flickers on and off. The spark needs to return back into the fire, the place where it will be naturally energized again. So in that spiritual life, which is really alive, which is pulsating with life, you need to make a connection. It's all about the connection to the spiritual reality. Most people, or many people, are yet seeking that, because in the name of spiritual life, they just do some external moves, so to say, but they lack that living connection to the fire, so to say, to the spiritual reality. I would like to give you the example. For me, as a practitioner, it is chanting the sacred Maha Mantra. I sometimes do this when I go on personal retreats for the entire day. And I come to situations where it's boring, where I feel I'm tired, my mind is distracted. It's only the shell, the external shell of the practice, but it's not connected. And then I do something which connects me, you know, when I notice it. As soon as I notice it, I can do it, but sometimes I'm just in a mood and don't notice that I'm in a mood. But when I notice, my God, I'm distracted and mechanic, then very simple, I do a few simple techniques to absorb myself. The mind has the ability to be distracted, but the same mind has the ability to deeply absorb and take on the quality of spirit, so that it totally pervades you. There are a few simple steps for this. Should be enough for this interview. You align your body to the practice. Then next step is you go inside and you bring your mind to what you're doing. It's almost like being mindful, but it's more than being mindful if you use potent spiritual practices and not just being mindful of how you eat a raisin or so on, but how you're mindful of your spiritual practice. And then the last thing is you must put some emotions in it, because so much of what we experience is dependent on the emotions. And then when you have body, mind, and heart absorbed, then the mantra, the powerful spiritual energy, or whatever practice you choose, it takes you like a vehicle. Therefore, it's called an upaya, a vehicle, and moves you from point A to point B. You know, the first level of spiritual life is effort, effort, effort. The second level is no effort. You are carried. And that is happening at the moment when you are absorbed, body, mind, and heart, into your practice. Your practice does everything. You are riding in a train of the mantra. It brings you somewhere.
You know, that's so beautiful to hear and inspiring. You know, sometimes, I'll be honest with you, Mark, sometimes I feel like even only recently in my life, and I've been practicing bhakti for over 30 years, I feel like only recently have I opened up some things like talking to God in my own heart, right? Like, it's part of our philosophy to understand God is in the heart of every living being. God is there, the witness. He's ready to hear you. He's ready to speak to you. And I almost feel like I've accepted that I've accepted that. Okay, that's true. But I've never opened up that conversation. And it's somehow, somewhat recently, I've begun to explore that world and go back and speak, you know, and talk and try to hear. But it's easy to as you were saying, we just do effort, 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 which is just, you know, important ways to regulate our lives or to serve, but missing that inner life. But for you, I know it's such a big part of your life. Is what inspired you to go there? Or were there certain people, certain saints, certain texts that you read, something in particular that made you say, oh, I need this, I really want this, I'm going to focus on this?
There was a key event, Kostova, and I am both a little bit shy to share it, but at the same time enthusiastic. It's because I think it will help you. It's a strange mix, really. Shyness and enthusiasm are almost opposite. Well, I was on a pilgrimage to the source of Ganga. It's a little small trek. You have to go a path this broad at times through the Himalayas. And I had been delayed. I started early, but I met this most interesting yogi on the way who said, would you like to see my cave? And who would say no when you can see the cave of a real Himalaya yogi? So I spent extra time there, then extra time at the Ram temple. I was really too late, and I came into what is called in that area the afternoon storms. These are really heavy storms which can take a donkey or a mule from the path and throw it into the valley and break its neck. It's really that you don't want to go into an afternoon storm. But I was there in the midst of the trek. It was still, I don't know how long to reach the place where I wanted to sleep before I made the final ascent to Mother Ganga source. So, yes, the storms came and I needed to find shelter. So I found, God's grace, a rock which had a little indent, and I could go there, and the rock was facing the storm. So I was in a storm-free area, and I wanted to wait the storm out. Then, this was just the preparation for the event. And what do? I just sing, and the storm is howling, threatening my very life if I get out. Then I look around. To the left side, there's only the mountain, but to the right side, there's the valley. By now, it had started to snow lightly, but because there was a storm, the snow was going in formations and circles. And I look down and I see very unclearly, first, there in the valley, it was not a deep valley, just a small nearby valley, no? Maybe 200 meters, 120 meters, I see someone is sitting. He sits in the midst of the storm. It was not as aggressive because he was protected by some trees, and the snow is coming down, and I see, and he's not disturbed. He's absorbed. The next thing is I see in his hand some beads. He's chanting something with the beads, and then I see something like sweet tears trickling down. He's not only absorbed, he's moved. And I thought, it's like these things which happen so fast. This is my road in life. I want to travel the path of absorption. Because only then I will get out of my mind. I will get away from my mindsets. And I will get in contact with another reality. And I don't know if this is proper English, but a haunting face, it returns again and again. And even in difficult situations, when the storm is threatening and everything happens haywire and difficult discussions, I go back to this unknown sadhu, this unknown saintly person with whom I never exchanged one word, whom I never saw from close, because he was a symbol. He acted as a symbol. He acted as a gateway into something which has called me. And I think all of us feel that calling. I want to finally come to a place where I don't hear my constant inner mind chatter. I want to come to a place where I'm not so disturbed when things change around me and unexpected things happen. Like it's quarrels with a near and dear one, or hunger, or a visit at the dentist, and so on. And yes, I want to be in my own inner space, my sacred space.
That's beautiful. And it seems to me like perhaps when you begin the path, being very engaged with other people is important, and filling your time up with service and seva and so on. But also, particularly as one advances, do you feel that there's a need? It seems to me like you were wandering off alone. And so there becomes a time where one has to spend some time alone.
Yes.
To work through the mind and the chatter that's always there to go deeper. Is that aloneness and a certain type of silence maybe is important even in our busy bhakti paths of service?
I think so. Therefore, the tradition always recommended retreats, you know. They are done traditionally at the time of Kartik. It's a whole month, really, when monks take this time. But then there are many days, like Ekadasi, the day yesterday, we took a walking retreat. We went through the beautiful lake area of nearby Berlin, and we really felt renewed by just being in the silence. And we also did a silent time where we are silent. See, my dear people, if you never, ever face the silent co-driver in your life, that's your mind, who's always there and who tells you really where to go. Sometimes he's right, most of the time he is so-so, and often he's outspoken wrong, you know. If you never face that inner GPS system, your mind, and you spend time with him, understanding him, pacifying him also. You want him to be your friend, right? You want him to be your partner who cooperates with you on your spiritual path. Then you will never be able to rewire yourself. But even in the name of spirituality, you will go back into these mental patterns or where you want to prove yourself because you want to be liked by others. And you will do all these things which distance you from yourself, your nature, your inner core. So time alone is necessary. Silence is necessary. It's called monam. And you will find out the mind is not the enemy. The mind wants to be the friend. You just have to engage him. You just have to do a little good education. My dear mind, see, when you will do like this, we suffer both. So why don't we do like that? And you, it's in your interest, you can say to the mind.
Yes, thank you. Well, okay, so speaking of like educating the mind, you've written this again, this lovely book, The Living Name. And it's a book, I love it so much because it's both inspirational but very practical. You give different exercises that people can perform. You give inspiration, and then you give an exercise so that someone can actually work with that mind and try to help it understand how it can be happier and how it can be absorbed and so on. People can find this book. I assume they can Google Satchidananda Swami and the Living Name, and they can find it. There's retreats that are connected to it, and there's online retreats going on that are connected to it. So there's a lot there. I was wondering, I think our listeners would love to hear you read any passages from it today. Could you share maybe a little from the book for us?
Yes, certainly. You started to quote this poem about life, and I have written something on life. Here we go. The author's reading for Wisdom of the Sages. Let me ask you a simple question. When are you alive? I would like to stop here. It's a question. Think for a moment. I repeat the question. When are you alive? A possible answer for me is when spiritual energy, the life force, is at work. When this energy, this life force, leaves, the body is dead. So in this paragraph, I'm trying to say, bring the life force into your life, the spiritual energy, then you are really alive. Not just if you hear your favorite music group and for a moment you dance or whatever. That's a momentary passion is entering into you. But we want a deeply nourishing life. No, that's something else. In the Harinam Chintamani, that's a book, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that in this world of life and death, only two spiritual entities exist. Individual souls, that's you, and the holy name of Lord Krishna. The art of chanting is to bring the two together. All else is lifeless matter. What I here want to say is, you become spiritually alive, alive in the deepest sense of the word, when you bring something that carries as much spiritual energy as the holy name which is there in the mantra, and you absorb yourself, you bring the two together. I would like to say something for the ladies here. Ladies are interested in beautiful eyes. I have heard. So there is in India a thing called kajal. Maybe you are using it. Is
mascara.
Yeah, mascara. It is two things which are brought together. There are various ways to prepare them. Even poor families apply this kajal or mascara to the eyes of their children. There is various ways, but it's always two ingredients which needs to be there. And then they are mixed. You bring them together, they are mixed, and mixed, and mixed, and mixed. Some is sometimes ashes, some it can be made of certain flower petals. You mix and mix and mix, and it's one thing, a black paste. And then you apply it around the eye, and as a result, the eye sees very, very, very nice things in the distance, and so on. It is a very powerful eye-opener or vision-opener or vision-enhancer. So in the same analogous way, you take yourself and then the mantra, you bring them together, and all of a sudden you become not only alive, but your whole spiritual vision opens, because a living person sees also something, no? So this idea has really informed me, and I took that from this meeting with the sadhu in the storm, the saint in the storm. I call him the saint of the storm for me, because it really changed my life like a storm. He taught me this one thing, mantra. I knew he was chanting a mantra by the beads which I saw in his right hand. But the thing which I had missed is absorption. Body, mind, and heart. And there are techniques, spiritual techniques, how to absorb the three, which I teach in my retreats and so on. But for here, we don't need to go now into too much detail.
So, okay. This is all very fascinating to me. And again, because I'm a person that's been chanting this mantra for over 30 years. Now, you know, when I first was introduced to bhakti, it was on the streets of New York City. Seeing people out there chanting this mantra, they seemed very strange to me, the way they were dressed, and even the music was very foreign to me. And as I got closer to it, the philosophy was explained to me, and the philosophy I found very appealing. I was like, okay, these people may look a little funny and so on, but they've got good answers to all the questions about life. It doesn't matter what I ask, they have a consistent answer that's very clear. And I was thinking, these people are onto something. But at the same time, still within me, the mantra itself, it seemed almost, my approach to it, I felt very distant from it, in the sense that the philosophy, it seems very well thought, but this thing where you just chant these magic words and they're in this kind of order, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare, it seemed to me almost silly that just by repeating these sounds, something magic or special is going to happen. Could you explain to me what is this mantra? What is it about it that's so special? How can we understand better what's happening when people chant this mantra? Why is it spiritual? What does it do? How does it work?
I like your honesty. I also thought we have a German word for what I thought. Die sind ja vom Mond. I thought they are from the moon. You know, some different planet, and they are not. They have nothing which relates to my life. What is so special then about this mantra when understood in depth? If you study the Patanjali, the great master of the yoga tradition, he gives a wonderful explanation for the one-syllable mantra, the sacred syllable Om. But this holds true, this explanation, for all the mantras. He says that special mantras are imbued with spiritual potency. And the commentaries of the tradition give a very good example. They say, if you have iron, ordinary iron, and you put it into fire, then that iron becomes fireized. For all practical purposes, it will act like fire. If you take a glowing red iron bar, which was long enough in the fire, and you put it into straw, as an example, yes, it will incinerate the straw. It will burn. So in the same way, certain syllables are in contact with Ishvara. It's one of the names of God. And they have become, so to say, Ishvararized or fireized or imbued with a special Shakti of Ishvara. And this is what makes the mantra work. It has a certain Shakti. But I would like to say the Shakti or energy needs to be uncovered by the practitioner. Therefore, there are various rules given in the traditions, chanted like this, avoid these things, and so on. And if one becomes, let me use this provocative term, a scientist, yes, who really explores how does this work, this combination of words. And when will it create the desired effect that I become fireized in contact? I become, there's the English word, I become fired up, so to say, with spiritual fire, with spiritual energy. Then, if you do this, it will stop to be just words for you. It will be a meeting with spiritual reality, with the personality, the unlimited complex personality of Krishna. He is at once present everywhere as what we call the Brahman. He's there also in your heart so that a relationship, a darshan, can take place and questions can be asked. And he is also there as a playful, loving, ecstatic, blissful, unpredictable divine personality called Krishna, and so many other names. But see, the mystery that here is some sound or some words, if you so want, they are more than words. They are spiritual reality that will uncover to, will be revealed to you only after some time. Let me please introduce to you as the three things, Kustuba, and everyone else who listens. The three P's of spiritual practice. The letter P? They all start with P. Yeah. The first P is philosophy. The second P is people who have embodied the philosophy, who live it, who emanate it, who where it comes out. And the last P is practice. The combination of these three will bring you to another level if you interact with them, if you interact with philosophy, with the people, and with the practice. Whoa! It is for sure doing something for beautiful for you.
So if I want to make sure I understand correctly, so the philosophy, we need to understand who I am, what this mantra is, what this world is, what God is. We need to understand all that. And we need to, at least theoretically, to start, we have to start there. And then there's going to be people that are absorbed in this that they're going to inspire us to commit and get involved and be enthusiastic and leave other things behind. And I want what they've got, like that.
Because they have it.
It's up to us.
Yeah, because they have it. Yes.
They have it. Yeah. But then ultimately it's up to us to practice. Yeah. Nobody can do that for us. So we have to take that very seriously. And, Is that how I should understand?
You are able to capture complex things and simple things, like the one which I gave you. Yes, exactly like that.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Martin. Now, we're running out of time, and Raghunath never came back. We lost him.
Maybe he took a plane to Vrindavan. He is pretty unpredictable.
Spontaneous.
Yeah.
Before we go, could you share, because our wisdom of the sages is all about reading Srimad Bhagavatam. Is there one verse that's very special and near and dear to your heart that you would like to share with us before we go?
That's the most difficult question. You know, I have three verses which come into the choice, but I will focus on one. Now this verse, I must say, is spoken, I must give you the context, by Vritasura. He is my example. He was once on a very high level, then he got cursed and turned for all practical matters into what you would call a man of darkness. You know, he looked like one. He looked deformed and demoniac. He thought like one. He was a man of the dark forces. I mean, really. And he led. He led everyone. He led a force of darkness against Indra, who had a force of the light being, the devatas. Now, in the midst of the battle, he turns around and he says to Indra, "Take this useless body from me. Throw your thunderbolt and take this life from me." And he goes on in this vein. And Indra thinks, "Oh my God, did I do a mistake? He's not a man of darkness. Inside, he's a saint," and he hesitates. But Vritasura, feeling so tired with and so ill at ease with the role he was acting out, the karmic role, he had been cursed, it's a karma, bad karma, you know, feeling so ill at him, wants only one thing. He wants to get out of this role, he wants to leave that theater play together, and he turns to Krishna and sings this beautiful verse. And please allow me to sing. But I am concerned with our Raghunath. Why don't we phone him? Maybe something happened to him, a flash or...
He lost his phone yesterday, so there's no communication.
Tell him...
Reach out to him.
Tell him there is a mantra to find the phone. Om okay. Hanumate Namaha. Search.
I wish I could tell it to him.
Yeah,
but I can't.
Yeah. Search for the phone, and then Om Hanumate Namaha. Or you can say Swaha. Namaha is. I have found even a tiny little key like this on a huge populated marketplace with just this mantra, Om Hanumate Namaha. So please tell him, because if he loses his phone one time, he will lose it two times, three times.
I would like to tell him, but I can't reach him by the phone.
Here is Mara Simmons.
You will have to...
Telepathically, yes. Afterwards. Oh, Mara, I hear you are the assistant. You are on Super Soul Farm?
No.
No, oh, not
just
there.
Just a half hour away.
Yeah, anyways, we will take care of our men in due course of time. Yes.
Okay.
So, the question, we are, my dear people, one more concentration. So here is this soul who is ill at ease with himself and the role he plays, and who just, how do you say in American English? He has it, you know, he is full.
He's had enough.
He had enough. Thank you.
He's sick of it.
He's sick of it. You know the language better than me. Yes. So he says, now listen to this talk. Aham haritava padaikamula dasanudaso bhavitasmi bhuya manasme smaritasu patirgunangste grinita vakamakaroti karma. Translation. O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant so that my mind may always think of your transcendental qualities, my words always glorify these qualities, and my body always engage in the loving service of your Lordship. He looks for a new identity. Mind, speech, body, a new identity. He wants to enter his spiritual position, his original position, his true nature. And he prays, and he is such a hero that he doesn't mind. He has just won a battle on the mundane field, but he doesn't mind to leave the body, leave all this to the other side. He is no longer concerned. Let Indra all have it. I want the real treasure. This is for me the sum and substance of the Bhagavatam.
That is very beautiful, Maharaj. We all have to get sick of it all. Let it all go. And pray like this.
Or do something else. Take a new perspective. Engage what you have. Engage your qualities. Engage your abilities. Utilize it, and in the utilization process, you will transform it, and it will become beautiful. The manager amongst you will become managing something good for the world. the advertisement genius who knows how to advertise even a tooth cream. And make it appear something beautiful. can advertise spirituality, bring it into the mind of these people, find the words. The farmer can make and grow beautiful flowers and so on. I think, you know, the materialist looks at the world with the idea to enjoy it. The beginning spiritualist looks away from the world to escape it. But the bhakti yogi looks at the world and towards the spiritual goal, Krishna, to engage the world and transform it. And that is a wonderful thing, because not every one of you will be a monk dancing and so on and so forth. Others have other roles to play in this life.
Maharaj, thank you so much. It's been absolutely wonderful speaking with you. We're going to beg you to please return to our show on a regular basis. Ask you to, if you could somehow make us that promise.